Welcome to the Best Coast Political Podcast with Jeremy Cardona and Matt Dell, coming to you from the traditional territories of the Lekwungen-speaking peoples, today known as the Esquimalt and Songhees First Nations. And Matt, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm pretty good, Jeremy. Here to talk about innovation in the city of Victoria. Innovative design, innovative public spaces, just looking forward again, thinking what should our city look like?
Yeah, it's kind of a part of a series of podcasts that we've done on downtown, frankly, and about reimagining downtown, re-envisioning downtown. What are the changes that you want to see post-pandemic? How do we revive the cultural life? How do we revive the economy? And do you want to introduce our guests?
Yeah, so we started today with Tessa McLaughlin, who is founder of Quench, a co-working space up in the west side of downtown, up by Phillips Brewery. And Tessa's a name that has come up many, many times, as someone who just has a really enthusiastic and innovative approach to business, to downtown, to, you know, thinking outside the box. And we tried to get her on our last podcast with Frank D'Ambrosio, and she finally was able to make it this time. We have Tessa, and then we have a guy named Will Sorrell, who is another Mad About Town, a new guy here who runs a new brewery called Two Dads Beer, and a design firm, kind of a public space design firm called First Place Agency. And I've seen Will's name come up in a lot of different places. I know he has a lot of experience at designing in the UK. That's who we have, Tessa and Will, coming on a little later.
Yeah, going to be some great guests, and I'm interested to see what they think about downtown Victoria. They're both immigrants to Canada. I think Tessa is from Australia and Will is from the UK, and they've been here for a few years. I think Tessa's been here longer than Will, but it's also really interesting to get the perspective of people who are coming from elsewhere in the Commonwealth, you know, people who lived in London or Melbourne or Perth or wherever, and can kind of bring a different perspective about public space. I think, I guess we'll get into it with them, but I'm particularly interested to hear what they have to say about public space and plazas, like changes to Centennial Square or to other kinds of public space like Broad Street or Government Street. I mean, people might have noticed that this month, March 2022, the city of Victoria is running an engagement about what to do with Lower Government Street, for instance. I mean, as many people know, during the pandemic, the city blocked off the street, the lower part of Government, at least part of the day and part of the week, and turned it into an outdoor public patio space for pedestrians and cyclists. And there was food trucks down there. And they're actually seeking feedback now from people, which is great, about whether or not that should continue or how what people think about turning that over to more of a public space.
Yeah, I love all those ideas. I think that's the one thing we're missing in the city is a lot of public space. And we do have some good parks. We have a lot of good beaches, but actually in the city, there's not a lot, particularly downtown. It's becoming more and more of a complaint, particularly for people in the Harris Green neighborhood, which has a ton of development and not a lot of space. You know, I think Fernwood gives a good example of like what that public space in a community can kind of look like. You have the pavilion, which is clearly an old closed down road. But like in my neighborhood, South Jubilee, we don't have that. We have a park. But of course, there's no coffee shop or anything there. So you kind of choose which one you want to go to, coffee shop or the park. And those things should be combined where there's multiple opportunities for multiple people. And people travel around the world. Anyone who comes back goes, you should have seen this city I went to. This city does this better, this better. And I think we have a long way to go in Victoria. And it's not necessarily a criticism of the past. It's more just like, let's focus on the future and improving downtown, starting with whatever, Centennial Square, which has so much room for improvement to be a more enticing public space.
Yeah. I mean, and other than that, the, my big preoccupation has obviously been the war in Ukraine, which has just been very all-consuming for me and really upsetting to see a democracy under attack like that from an imperial power. And I keep just trying to think about how this relates to my own life and how this relates to the community work that I do and what I care about, our democracy. And I mean, I think it might sound kind of corny or hokey, but I do think that one of the things that we can be doing here to support, maybe not to support Ukraine, but to support the cause of democracy is to take our democracy seriously. I think the least that we can do is like when the city has an engagement, get involved, definitely vote, pay attention to what's going on in your city, join your community association, vote in municipal and provincial and federal elections, like really get passionate about your democracy, because not everyone has democracy. And some people in Ukraine are losing it right now because they're being bombed cities are being bombed. And so, you know, I mean, the other thing that's been going on in Victoria is that we've had all these anti-mask and anti-vax protests downtown. I mean, in many ways, Victoria feels really put upon. Victorians feel put upon by a lot of these people who've been coming from outside of Victoria and coming and holding marches and honking horns. And you know, based at least on the circles that I'm involved in, they haven't been particularly well received in this town, to say the least. They're not, you know, I don't take away from anyone's right to protest, but these people are whining about their loss of freedom. It's like, get on a plane and go and fight for freedom in Ukraine if you care about freedom, because having to wear a mask is not a loss of freedom. Being bombed by Russians, that's a loss of freedom.
Yeah, it's been pretty annoying to have those protests here, but in a way, that's where the provincial capital, and it's, you know, that's how it goes here. Thank God we're not Ottawa, where they actually descended upon. These guys pack up every Saturday. Yeah, I know you and I have both had encounters where we've been screaming at anti-maskers, one who was saying I was an abusive parent for having my daughter in a mask, and that led to some choice words, which, you know, it is what it is. God, I hope we're coming to an end here, because I know some places the pandemic seems to be lightening up, and it would be nice to kind of put this all behind us, because I don't know if we're going to win any other way. These people are entrenched. I see them. They have custom made hoodies and flags and clothes. Like, they are really dug in here. So
it really pisses me off, though, especially, I mean, I'm an immigrant to Canada, right? I've been here for 15 years, but I'm an immigrant. And for me, the Canadian flag always represented peace and security and peacekeepers and tolerance and the welcoming nature of Canadian culture. And it really bothers me to see the flag appropriated in such an aggressive way and have it turned into like an aggressive hyper-nationalist symbol, like we've seen with the American flag or with any other kind of flag from jingoistic countries. I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to see the Canadian flag and on somebody's car and be like, who is this person? You know, I don't want it to be seen as this aggressive symbol. And unfortunately, that's what's happened over the last couple months.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, I saw at my mom's like retirement condo last night, someone had the flag like out of their car. And I'm like, you know, is this patriotic Canadian or just is anti-vaxxer here?
I know. You got to wonder.
And hopefully that'll go away where we can put this behind us at some point. Because, you know, between what's an actual tragedy in the Ukraine, like, it's just so much drama in our lives. I do have a funny thought on all the protesters. Though, I've been downtown the last two Saturdays getting new glasses with the protests there. And I thought it's kind of funny how much of them are just like enjoying the urban experience after they're done protesting. Like, they're out about town, they're checking out the restaurants. I was down at the beach and there's a bunch of them down the beach. And it's like, hey, they might hate the mandates, but they really like urbanism and walkable neighborhoods. So,
well, they're not allowed to go into restaurants, so I guess they have to spend time outside.
There's a bunch at the Green Cuisine restaurant, you know, the kind of vegan place, because I guess they weren't, it's a buffet. I don't know. They weren't checking mandates. So that place was packed when I was there on Saturday with people not wearing masks and holding their signs in the line. So yeah, it's too much for me. So
yeah. All right. Well, let's bring on our guests.
All right, here we go. Bringing in Tessa and Will to talk about urbanism and innovation in Victoria. Okay, we're recording. So welcome to the podcast, Tessa and Will. We're here today to talk about loosely innovation in the city of Victoria. We want to just brainstorm and dream a little bit about future Victoria, whether that's innovation in community building, innovation in public space, innovation in the arts, innovation in business, innovation in anything. Just kind of help us, you know, think about what's Victoria going to do in 5, 10, 20, 50 years. And maybe, you know, we're not going to get there unless we think about it. And there's so many big thinkers in Victoria, and lots of folks identified you two as two of those people. So hence why we're here today. But before we get into innovation, I thought we could maybe start a bit of talking about our guests, Will and Tessa, and who they are and what they do in Victoria. Maybe starting with you, Tessa, can you tell us yourself and Quench and what you do in the city?
Yeah, so my name is Tessa McLaughlin, and I'm the founder and director of Quench, which is a work club. I call it a culture club. In Victoria, we have just above gymnastics, Victoria Gymnastics, so in a very sort of unassuming building, but when you come in, it's pretty spectacular. So yeah, what do we do? I mean, Quench as a culture club rents or has memberships for people who want to work from the space, whether they want to work from a kind of cafe library style, or if they want their own desk, or if they want an office. So we have lots of varied members from different industries. We have freelancers, entrepreneurs, you know, we have writers and artists and designers, and it's just a really cool place to be. It's pretty fun in here all the time.
Great. Yeah, yeah. I've heard so many good things about Quench. I think in particular, it's a new model. It's a new model of doing things, which I think applies to everything we can do in a city. So yeah, we'll dig into that. Thanks for that, Tessa. And maybe over to you, Will. Where are you? Why are you here?
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me. Well, yeah, as we talked about, I'm a very new Victorian. I got here just 2 years ago, and much of that has been the pandemic. So it's been a very interesting switch over from London and the UK for me. And I've got two hats at the moment. So I started an agency called First Place with Jody Phillips, who's based in Vancouver, with the aim of making better places in the Pacific Northwest. So leveraging arts and culture to make developments and urban projects gel better with local communities. So that's been really interesting, you know, relatively new business. And we seem to be doing lots of interesting projects with nature at the moment. I can tell you more about that later. And then also I recently started something very different and new for me, which is a brewing company, Two Dads Brewing. And we've just started producing beer, and we're trying to find a location for that to make what, you know, you've heard the phrase, we use it in the UK a lot, a local. I'd love to have a walkable brewery in a residential neighborhood, which is a community hub. So there's the two things. And yes, so my background's in the design industry, and I've been working in that industry for 15 years.
Wow, really cool. And the very first thing that came to my mind, Will, is that, I don't know if you know this, but they recently, the city of Victoria a couple of years ago, rezoned Haultaine Street to be permissible to a microbrew.
Okay, I did not know that. I've talked to so many people about brewery locations, and we're searching at the moment. So that's a great tip.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think there was another potential brew pub idea, and so they rezoned it. So the whole street of Haultaine, as far as I know, or portions of it between Cook Street and Shelburne, potentially have a microbrewery, because as you know, right, we have a lot of them in the downtown core, but not really a lot in residential areas.
Yes, lots of breweries that you have to drive to, which is quite ironic.
Yeah, right.
And but you won't be able to call it, you won't be able to call it the local, because isn't the coffee shop there called the local?
the local coffee shop's called Coffee with a K.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, I thought it was the local.
Oh, but there is the local general store there.
Right. Okay.
And anyway, Tessa, I just want to say welcome to the podcast. I've had a chance to work in Quench before in a previous political role. We had meetings there in your old location on Fort Street.
Right.
I think did you undertake the move before the pandemic or during the pandemic?
So on Fort Street, I knew I had this building. And so we were building out this building while we were at Fort Street.
Okay.
And then we moved, we moved in October 2019, just in time for the pandemic. So we took on a $25,000 lease. No, sorry, 25,000 square foot lease right before the pandemic.
And, wow. And could I ask how have you done? How did your business survive during the pandemic?
It's been really hard. I mean, it's been, I think there was a few things for us that played in our favor. One is that we have a lot of space. So we could, even though we could only have 50% of people in the building, we could spread everybody out. And then the other thing for us is we had such an amazing community. And it was the community that kept us going, because people wanted us to be here when the pandemic was over. So members were still paying their membership. People were still coming in because, you know, a lot of people were feeling disconnected and lonely, and it was the community that kept us going for sure.
I mean, Matt, if I could just, you know, bring Will in, this is part of a kind of a series of podcasts we've done on the local economy in Victoria and on downtown and on re-envisioning downtown and on what comes next after the pandemic. And so maybe that's a logical place to start for the both of you. I mean, Tessa, you've been here for a while. Will, you've been here kind of basically during the pandemic. I mean, maybe as a starting place, the question is, what changes have you witnessed in Victoria during the pandemic? What did Victoria lose? And what does it need to regain? Or what are the opportunities now?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that we gained that I love have been the outdoor spaces. Like, I just love that idea of, well, you know, the Europeans do it so well, don't they, Will? It's like, you know, the squares, the zócalos, like in Mexico, and it brings a life and a vibrance to a city. And I think that, you know, because we are on the Pacific Northwest, it's quite rainy here, so we tend to be indoors a lot. But Victoria's not rainy. So as much, it is raining today, but it's so great to have all these patios out there and you see people out doing things. And that's been a great benefit, I think, for me.
Yeah.
And I agree with that massively. It's one of my sort of favorite things the last couple of years, both the temporary patio schemes and the more permanent applications you've been able to make. And this is probably a very unpopular thing to say, but also it's eliminated cars from outside places. So I hate sitting, having a drink or a coffee, looking at someone's Toyota. It's not the best view. It's nice to see the
street. What if it was a Kia?
Oh, maybe. That's my arm. But it's you know, we're talking about innovation. Like, I think one of the most important parts of innovation, and Tessa, this is exactly what you do, is the cross-pollination of people, is being able to bump into people, make that connection, see people, have a random encounter. And you can do that in a street where there's cafes and bars on either side and you bump into people. And it's so important. And it's something that I've definitely missed moving here. I don't see people on the street. I see them through a car window at a red light. And so I think, I completely agree. That's been my favorite pandemic innovation.
A couple of takes on that. I was looking up urban innovation today, and there's actually a concept called an innovation district. And an innovation district is a new style of design where they are purposely kind of jamming all these disparate ideas into a little community that's really designed to force accidental collisions of people, like putting artists and putting businesses and restaurants and all this stuff in one. And I kind of thought, you know, people, when they talk about a district, they often think of kind of where you are, Tessa. Maybe whether it be an arts district or an innovation district, it's just kind of like, it used to be a forgotten part of town up in by the Phillips Brew Pub up there that has an industrial vibe, and maybe people are a little less fussy that, yeah, we could have more arts there or more different styles of building that I think people might be more upset about to see down by the legislature, where they kind of want to preserve this old style of Victoria. But there's a lot of us who, yes, we like that, but we want to bring some of that innovation that's happening around the world. And where you're at in Quench seems like a good spot to try an innovation district, whatever that is, where the rules are more flexible.
Yeah, and that's what they've dubbed it, I think, isn't it? The city is called this area now the Arts and Innovation District.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, that's what it's been called. So Reliance has just purchased all the property, the Capital Iron property, and they're doing a massive development there. And they're doing a lot of consulting to make sure that it fits in with the vision of the Arts and Innovation District. And yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, we all want it a little bit gritty sometimes, you know, when everything, like I think of how when I designed, my interior designer and I designed this space, I didn't want a space that felt so curated that you wouldn't move a magazine because you were like, I think that magazine's supposed to be there. Like, I will not put it back in the right spot, you know? And I think that that's what we want our cities to be like. You know, if everything's too pristine and too manicured, you're not going to get that freedom to sort of, feel free, I think.
Right. And Tessa, while you're on the topic, is it still, and the last I heard, it's still the plan to put the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria right next to Capital Iron. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't, no.
Yeah.
But that would be so good. That would be so great.
That's supposed to be part of the vision. We had them on the podcast a while ago and they were talking about that.
Wow.
But I know that there's a lot of steps that have to happen for that to occur. But I think it would be the right spot. And I think they're talking about putting a ground floor cafe in and things like that. And I mean, this is a topic that Matt and I harp on quite a bit, is the need for more cultural assets in downtown Victoria, right? Because, I mean, Matt and I both have small, you know, young kids between, I don't know, how old Sophie? Four, five?
Mine are five and nine. I think Will is pretty similar to me.
Yeah. Correct? And mine are now 11 and 12. But, you know, historically, there hasn't been all that much that brings me to downtown Victoria as a dad. You know, mm-hmm. we ride our bikes through downtown Victoria to go to Banfield Park, for instance, in the summer to go swimming. And we go to the museum, of course. We go to the Royal BC Museum. But other than that, there's not a whole lot that brings me downtown mm-hmm. as a parent. And I think that that's a problem. And I grew up across the water in Seattle. And I don't know if either of you have been to Seattle, but Seattle has a lot of stuff going on in downtown. There's the Children's Museum. There's the Seattle Center. There was, until recently, an amusement park. And there's all these things that my family would go to downtown Seattle probably once a month and spend time there, patronize the businesses. And if we don't have those kind of cultural assets in downtown, then it's not really of use to a lot of the people who live here in the residential communities, unless they're going there to work.
Yeah. And not only cultural assets, but ones that appeal to very different demographics as well. So ones that maybe you want to bring your kids to, or ones for the older generations, and ones for the people in their 20s as well. I mean, I did a little at the art gallery. I think it would be a fantastic move for Victoria if that came into the center. I think they're going through a lot of processes, and I think they're searching for a new exec director and all kinds of things at the moment. Yeah. Someone to drive that forward, because it's a big, big capital project.
Yeah,
but it would make a huge difference. But yeah, it's. I was doing a bit of Googling, and I just thought, where in Europe is the same size as Victoria? And I found Ljubljana in Slovenia, which is a city I absolutely love. It's I think it's around 300,000 population. It's the capital city of a country of 2 million, so much smaller than BC. We're the capital of BC here. And they've got, I think, about 15 museums and about 50 art galleries. And it's so interesting. I mean, okay, maybe not a fair comparison. It's a very, very old city. It's been around for a lot longer. But then it's very different. Tessa, you talked about the grittiness, and that's true. Like, if the art gallery went here, it'd be fantastic. It's going to be a very different thing to one of these older Ljubljana galleries, which is in a building that's been around for 300 years. It's going to have a different vibe, be very pristine and be a new center. But I still think it's important. But there are, you know, I've been thinking about beer a lot recently, and what about a museum of a brewing? It would be fantastic. It would attract a very different demographic from across North America. Victoria, Vancouver Island is the cradle of craft brewing, really. I mean, mm-hmm. people in Europe had stopped doing it. People like Paul Hadfield innovated here, started this scene, which has burgeoned, and Victoria should be shouting about being the home of it. I think it would be, you know, something like that would be a fantastic attraction.
Well, and you probably know this, Will, but the Sands Peninsula was once upon a time a huge producer of hops that were sold all the way around the world. Like, I think they shipped them all the way to Australia and such. Like, it was known for its hops because it has the perfect climate for it. I think that's a fantastic idea.
And what about when we talk about public space, Tessa, what comes to your mind that we're missing in Victoria, you know, from other places you've been, you kind of go, I wish we had that here.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the Zocalos or the squares is definitely something that I really appreciate in Europe. And this isn't always a fair comparison, because if there's something that my home country has, it is really good weather. So outdoor living in Australia is very different to outdoor living here. But one of the things I really notice when I go home is how much is outdoors. Like, you know, there's outdoor cinemas on every street corner, it seems. And I'm from Western Australia. I'm not from Perth, but I do go to Perth regularly. And there's outdoor cinemas all through Perth. They have a massive square that has the art gallery, the museum, an arts club, like a theatre company in this big square. And that's right in the centre of Perth. And it's incredible, because you can go to the library, you can go to the arts gallery, you can go and see a show. There's all pubs right near there. And then my town where I'm from, and this is the one thing I just love, it's a small beach town, but along the whole beachfront are these barbecues, and they're city run barbecues. And so you come along, the city cleans them at night. but you come along and everyone comes with their sort of most people have a mat that they put on the barbecue that you can cook everything on, and you just push a button. So you don't have to start a fire. You don't have to do anything else. You just push a button. The barbecue starts. And there's another family having a barbecue, you know, 10 feet away, and another family 20 feet away. It's the best thing.
I love that. I don't know why we don't do that here. It boggles my mind why we're so opposed. It's like almost here we don't want people in parks. We're like, oh God, if we have a barbecue, but then people will come and then they'll annoy each other. And oh, let's just let's just kind of leave money. It empty.
Yeah, and it's fire, right? I mean, yeah, we have Protestant roots, right? So we're skeptical of fun, especially fun that's being had in public, which never leads to anything good. I've thought that myself. I mean, why can't we just have contained beach fires at Willows and stuff? I think there would be such pushback from neighbors, but if you had barbecues, there would probably be less pushback. Yeah.
And they're maintained by the city. And I mean, I think that as Canadians, we are a little bit more cautious like that. And I really, as I said, I get, we don't have the weather to just be down barbecuing every night. But the energy that it brings, like we have, they also have them at playgrounds in Australia. So you can go to a playground that, you know, probably Jeremy, our kids don't go to as much anymore, but yeah, Will and Matt, your kids would be at. And there's the families of all different backgrounds, and it's just so fun to see everybody, and it makes the city vibrant.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Yeah. I think the playgrounds here are really good. I mean, compared to the ones in the UK, it's awful. I mean, the health and safety stuff in the UK is just a different level. Everyone's paranoid. All the parks close at 3 o'clock in the winter. You can't do anything. So I was amazed when I came here at how much money is invested. So I guess it's all relative, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and there's not only that, there's the beaches and everything, very accessible.
Well, I want you to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about some of the nature-based projects you're working on, and maybe if there's an opportunity to think about how those might tie into, for instance, the Inner Harbor in Victoria, because it's been a long-standing issue in Victoria, you probably know this, but that it's actually pretty difficult to access the Inner Harbor in terms of the water itself. In Victoria, you can see it, but actually getting there, putting your feet in the water, having a picnic by the water is actually pretty difficult in a lot of places, and that's been on the city's radar for a while. So anyway, I just wanted to open the floor, see if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, this project we're doing is actually more related to forestry. So it's an interesting one. So it's going to be an exhibition that's going to start in Vancouver and very hopefully come to Victoria as well. It's called Past Present, and it's examining BC's relationship with logging. And it's trying to look at through the lens of design at what more sustainable alternatives might be. So one of the central elements of it is going to be a project with Emily Carr, University of Art and Design, where the design students are going to work with hemlock, which is sourced from Cortez Island, where there's a really interesting example of hyperlocal sustainable forestry. There's a cooperative which is owned 50% by the Clahoos First Nation. And so Ellingson Wood, so one of the companies who work with the forestry cooperative there, are going to be involved with hemlock. Is this quite underused wood, because it's quite tricky to work with, but it's got quite beautiful properties, and it grows like weeds in this climate. So it's a lot more sustainable and able to regenerate. Plus they selectively harvest and really, you know, steward that, and only a tiny fraction of it every year that's harvested.
That's really interesting.
So they're going to make about 12 to 15 marketable products to demonstrate, yes, you can use this and it can be viable. And we're going to have that alongside a narrative of what's happened and maybe different examples from the design industry of other sustainable ways and looking at things like mass timber construction. Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting one. It's going to start in Vancouver. Of course, that's where Emily Carr are. And we want it to be a really accessible public exhibition. So it's not just an academic exhibition taking place in one of a university building. It's going to be as a placemaking tool in a new property development downtown, which we'll be confirming very soon, we hope. And then, of course, we wanted to come to Victoria because it's the province's capital, and it's very important, especially given all the debate around Ferry Creek over the last year and a half. So that's been a really interesting project to work on.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Mm-hmm. Matt, you want to jump in?
Yeah, no, that sounds like the type of thing that we desperately need here. I'm still thinking about fire pits and barbecues and kind of going, oh yeah, like, geez, how many things like that do we need? I guess one of the things that I wanted to share, and maybe to see what other folks think of this is like one of the challenges we have, kind of Jeremy, back to your cultural infrastructures, our two big infrastructures, which is the public library and Crystal Pool, are really these like classically outdated buildings. That I guess the theme for me is no shared space. Like when you go into the pool, it's like you pretty much filter into the change room. There's really no community associated with it. The same as the library, you kind of walk in, you're kind of like you're forced to go somewhere. And I think we've moved on from that style of design to a design style of more like shared usage in lots of public space in our community amenities. So I know Victoria's grappling with a new pool, Crystal Pool. That for me, the aside from a pool at Crystal Pool, I really want to see it become a community hub that brings in like the pub, the coffee shop, huge gathering spaces. So you can actually use these public facilities, not just for their recreational purposes, but more as a community facility. Maybe that means like when the parents drop the kids off at the pool, there's the library that they can go to. And I just think that we're really missing that in Victoria. And I haven't seen enough of a conversation really forcing those ideas to say like, we need to be using shared space here in the city more often. Oak Bay Rec, just as an example, I'm not sure who's been there, but they do have a pub upstairs that overlooks the pool. And it's just funny, like now on Friday nights, what we do is we go and I can send my kids to the pool and we can like, you know, hang out upstairs with other parents. And I think it's so often, you know, our design, we neglect young parents and those meeting spots that they need. Absolutely. Like, unfortunately, restaurants don't work for a lot of us because you go with a bunch of other families and the kids are just so, you know, annoying running around everywhere. And it's a lot of money. Parks can be too cold all winter long. So it's like, well, where do we go? And, you know, people in smaller homes and then the pandemic and not even the pandemic, even pre-pandemic, it's like, so people were always sick with a cold or this or that, like half the dinner plans that you planned would be canceled because some kid had a cold. So I'd like to see Victoria, particularly on Crystal Pool and on the new public library, which is up in for discussion right now, really build two kind of community hubs. And yeah, just maybe your thoughts on that, Tessa, and the need for those.
I mean, I totally hear you. I mean, when my kids were young, it's such an isolating time already when you're the stay-at-home parent. And then all of a sudden you're isolated from society too. When my kids were young was before you weren't allowed to go to the pubs with your kids. And I'm not saying everyone should be allowed, you know, I recognize that there's different levels that people are used to with children and being around alcohol. But I love the idea of being able to just, I could go and have a relax and have my kids play in the playground across the road from the pub. And I could actually talk to adults. Another thing that obviously I'm comparing a lot to Australia, which I'm not saying Australia's better. I'm just,
no, that's great. We're here for this.
But I know one of the things that I found was very different from being in Australia and trying to raise kids as to here was in Australia they had the creches. Do they call them a creche in England? A creche, Will?
We say creche, not creche. But yeah,
creche. And it, they have them. So at any like public gym like that's run by the city, from like 8 o'clock until midday or 1 o'clock, there's a free daycare, like free creche for the kids. So as a parent, you can go and go, great, I don't have to then pay for someone to look at my kids. I just go swim some laps and then my kids are in there. So that was something that, I mean, I was raising my kids in Squamish, so it was very different, but I couldn't do that. So I couldn't exercise. I couldn't see people. We had to go to the McDonald's when it was raining all the time. Like, are you kidding me? Like, yeah. Sorry, that was just like insane for me that I have
still
to sit
like
in
that.
McDonald's. So I think that you're right. I think being more family focused brings vibrancy to a city, and you want your kids to be involved in what's going on because it makes the downtown cores safer and once again more vibrant. And
it's true. And these the creches in the UK, it would be private health centers would have them, and you pay a nominal amount of money, but they'd be tiny spaces in the city, but they've managed to have a little cafe and a little daycare for know, you pay £6 for your hour or something like that, and then which sounds like a lot of money, but you know, it's expensive.
Oh, it was worth it. What money well spent.
Yeah, but if you you know, like the Oak Bay you were talking about, if you have the pub or the cafe or whatever it is, then that's where people have their birthday parties, and it becomes this community hub which you use all the time. And it's what we were talking about, these cross pollination and encounters with people. That's where that can happen. And I think, you know, a lot of where I'm in Cabra Bay, so I've got Gordon Head closer to me. You've got all these places which are, I think, you know, 70s developments, when I think people, it was a lot of car-based planning people had in their heads. So when you're starting from scratch now, it's easier to carve out an area and set it up for having a cafe or a community space. It makes more sense, but it's very much like show up, throw the kids out and off you drive. It was on people's minds when they were designing it then.
Yeah. The only crash that I can think of around here is at IKEA. That's the only one.
Yes. I've seen. Yeah.
But I was going to add, you know, before living in Victoria 10 years ago, I lived in Edmonton in Alberta, and there was a new museum there that had a cafe. That was a great place to just go and hang out when you had a toddler. And there was also, you know, prior to the collapse of bookstores, there was a couple of great bookstores where also they had a cafe in the bookstore. Sometimes we bought a book, sometimes we didn't, but we would go there, we'd have a coffee, and there'd be a big play area. And it was one of those kinds of spaces where you could just go and hang out when you have small children. And we really don't have a lot of those spaces left anymore in Victoria. And therefore, there's been this like atomization for parents. Unless you actually have a little network and you're getting together at someone's house, there's not that many places to go that are public. I mean, the one idea, I have a few ideas for changing downtown. I'll tell you my one of them is that I would like to knock down the parkade that is in Centennial Square, because for me, Centennial Square is a bit of a nightmare. It's
terrible.
Concrete, it's brutalist. Unless you are there specifically for a rally or an event or a concert or something, 98% of the time, it's a very underutilized public space, because there's nothing that actually keeps people there and having a good time. It's a bit of a dead space. The fountain's also just a nightmare. So what I would do is I would knock down the parkade and build the brand new Greater Victoria Public Library right there, so that you have your GPPL right next to City Hall. And on the ground floor, I would put a cafe, and I would spread out patio seating all throughout Centennial Square, so that it becomes more of your European style plaza.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's such a funky square though too, isn't it? Like that, I look at the fountain and I'm like, this is actually such a funky place, but it's so unutilized. Like there's nothing.
Totally underutilized. It's a classic underutilized public space, and as a result, people just hang out and party there, and it becomes a space that doesn't feel very accessible for families or for tourists. Whereas if you had a cafe, a ground floor cafe, I mean, you could even put the parking below ground too, to like satisfy all the parking truthers. You wouldn't even have to get rid of any parking. You just put that underground and actually like a modern normal city, have your nice big library right in the center of your town.
That sounds like a great idea. I mean, and the other thing that could add to that is I always find programming. So temporary public art and design initiatives.
Yeah.
And if you've got reasons for people to go to a place, it's great. And then reasons for them to keep coming back, even better. I've worked on a few different public spaces in London, the most recent one being Granary Square in King's Cross, which is a brand new development. And that's actually a privately owned public space, which has its own set of issues. But because they've got a vested interest in the economic sustainability of that place, they spend a lot of money doing stuff all year round, whether it's they've got fountains, you know, those fountains which have program jets, which kids love playing in, and they rent. You get people to come along with huge bubble machines. They have amazing Christmas trees there every year. They have temporary sculptures in the summer. So it's about, you know, having a proper programming strategy to bring these places to life.
I agree. That could fit into Jeremy, what you're talking about, the library there is like, it's not just a cafe, but also like some community space that's maybe just open. Like hell, like even on the ferry, like just put a TV on sometimes with some like, you know, YTV or whatever. Cause you know, when you're on the ferry and the kids actually sit down and they're like, yeah, I'm trying to catch up, my friend. You just go watch TV. I don't care what it is. Just entertain yourself. My funny story about the Centennial Square is whenever I go there, my kids are like, cool, can we go in the water fountain? And it's like, no, you can't even do that either. Like this is like no fun allowed in this place.
You're gonna get
like,
hepatitis or something.
make it interactive. And then there's these like metal, there's actually a fountain there. That's kind of, it's a piece of art. It's like a metal waterway with a little water vault, and my kids are like, is that the water slide? Like, can we go on that? And I'm like, no, you can't touch that. So they actually kind of go in there, and I was like, you know what, why not just put like three little water, like mini water slides. They would only go like 20 feet. In the summer, there's like three little water slides and they go into the fountain. Like people would, and they have that at Uptown, like Uptown's smart now. Like even Walmart is learning like how people love urban design, where Victoria, we're still kind of caught 20 years in the past, but there's so much potential. Just anything is better than the status quo.
Have you guys seen, and Will, we talked about this with the group that we're part of with SIP, but in Melbourne, sorry to keep bringing it back to Australia, but in Melbourne there was this square that was really run down. It was right across the road from one of the main train station. It was not the best place at all. And so then I went back there, not recently, actually, probably like 10 years ago, but they completely changed it. And it's like the place to go. Wow. They put crap loads of money into it. It's got bars and restaurants and it's got stores, but it's all like they built up and it's got a massive screen in the middle. It's called Federation Square. Definitely something to look at, because I was super impressed with that. I was like, oh my gosh, this used That's to be cool. the rundown place to go, and now it's where everybody was having a drink.
And an example even closer to home, and for me very close to home, because I live on the 1300 block of Gladstone right here in Fernwood. I don't know how long you've been in Victoria, Tessa, and for you, Will, only having been here a few years, I assume you know Fernwood Square, Will?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know this, but about 20 years ago, Fernwood Square was like boarded up ghetto. Yep. There were squatters. Mm-hmm. It was completely derelict urban space. And mainly through the work of the two neighborhood associations here, mainly Fernwood NRG, Neighborhood Resource Group, but also the FCA, the one that I'm involved in, the Fernwood Community Association, they, in conjunction with the city and money from the city, they revitalized this urban area in a way that didn't make it corporate. And we're very proud today that all of the businesses in Fernwood are small independent businesses. There's no chains here at all. And then even during the pandemic, a portion of Gladstone was shut to traffic and there's now patio seating there. I don't know if you've been over here in a while, Will.
I've been out there.
Oh yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. That was a huge bit of progress. Going back to your point earlier about creating more public space. In a sense, we sort of doubled the size of Fernwood Square. Even if you have cars going slowly, on a one way is allowed to go on Gladstone. I wish they had totally shut it that to cars. And that was a bit of a controversial move, because I know the Fernwood Inn did not want it closed to vehicles. But in any case, there is at least patio seating now, and it adds to the amount of public space and the frequency with which I run across people when I'm out and about in Fernwood Square. Yes. You know, it densifies those interconnections.
I have a photo just to show you guys from downtown. I don't know if you can see it, but it's I'm showing on my cell phone right now.
This is
on
the weekend. Broad Street or Government?
This is my daughter on Government Street walking up the middle of the road with you can't see it. Crazy. With a bunch of picnic tables and things like that in the middle of the road.
Broad Street too, right?
That's Government. It's just so nice to be down there and to have her just like roaming and exploring the city without having to worry about, you know, running into traffic. And she just kind of like, it just felt like, oh, this is what a city for kids is like. Like we've taken the street back. And I know there was a motion this week to reopen the street for city buses because the cruise ship people didn't want to walk like two blocks or something like that. And it just shows, this is how we can serve cruise ship people, or we can serve the kids and families that live in the city. And it's just really nice to have that.
So I'm torn on that. Only because I love it. I love it. You know, a mall back home is our streets blocked off, and we have them in every city in Australia, and they're fantastic, and they're built for that. What I feel for the people who pay the exorbitant rents on Government Street, because they pay those rents because they knew they were in a high traffic area. So to now say to them, oh, we're just going to move it, but their rents are still staying the same. I mean, us small businesses that are we run our business based on people coming into our physical location. It's been a rough 2 years, a really rough 2 years. And so, you know, the ones that have lasted the last 2 years, we really need people to start coming in again now. So I think there definitely would need to be some consultation with those people on Government Street. I definitely understand their frustrations with that.
But I mean, the thing is that when the city looked into this, they found that the overwhelming majority of the people that were driving down Government Street were just passing through. It's not like they're stopping and spending dollars, right? Mm-hmm. They're just transiting that area. And, you know, I mean, there would have to really be a good economic impact analysis done. But I mean, based on what I've seen, pedestrians spend more money than cars driving through.
For sure.
You know, especially if they're just transiting. So I think it would be really good to get the facts on that.
Yeah, it would be interesting.
Cars transiting, then put them over onto Wharf Street and, you know, but
your
right.
Your point's taken, though. I agree. And I don't mean to be dismissive of the small businesses. It's more like this is actually getting us downtown as a family who don't go downtown.
Exactly. And it makes me want to go down and spend money there. Otherwise, I don't. Right.
Yeah. So it might take a little transition for people to get, oh, yeah, wait, this is a pedestrian space. But hopefully, you know, things will come back stronger for those businesses there.
Are we the outliers, though? Because I do sense in Greater Victoria, there are a lot of people who are almost scared of or reticent to go downtown at all. I don't know if you guys pick that up, even with the pedestrianization.
Yeah. We pick that up a lot. I mean, you know, Matt and I could answer that question, but maybe it's a better question for the two of you with your connections to downtown Victoria. Do you feel like downtown Victoria is unsafe? Do you feel like it's fallen on hard times? Do you feel, what's your sense of that?
Well, I mean, for me, it's less people who used to go there are going. So the, you know, homeless population and all of that is a lot more visible as a result. That's what I think. I don't think it's got bigger. I just think it's more visible because there's less other people. Mm. I love going downtown. I just feel very at home when it's busy. there's businesses. and I'm in a lot more suburban than I've ever lived in my life. So, but yeah, I find any opportunity I can to go downtown and hang out there and spend a day or an evening.
Yeah. Tessa, what do you think?
It's a good question. I have a my kids are teenagers now, and of course a teenage daughter. And so she catches the bus quite a lot. So does my son, not as much, but it's different. when it's a girl. And she's very savvy, but I definitely, I don't know how to answer it. I mean, I find it fine. There's areas around, obviously, where we are, because there's not as much foot traffic that can be a bit dangerous. But I don't quite know.
I had an interesting take on that. So I was downtown yesterday with the photo I showed and had the first like really violent situation I've been in. And it was actually from a couple who was an anti-masker couple who were just standing on the street and yelling at my daughter and me going like, you're an abusive parent and your kids are masked. And this other dad, they're yelling at him. He's loading his a baby seat into a minivan. And it turned out into a fight. And it's like, it's kind of this, you know, this myth, the most danger I felt from downtown has been from like drunk men outside the bar, like threatening fights. And now anti-maskers, like, you know, those are the kind of people and they're in, you know, very, very unstable and dangerous and looking to cause. So, you know, I think sometimes we need to rethink that narrative of what is the violence. And I mean, I've been here for 20 years now and, you know, I'm not going to claim.
I want to echo Will's point though too, which is that I do have the subjective perception. I think it's probably verifiable during the pandemic that there's just fewer people going downtown. Mm. It just feels like there's less life there. And I think that as we ease out of the pandemic, I think it's going to be an important issue for municipal politics and for this city as a whole to breathe life back into downtown, to bring the people back, to put new cultural assets, because so many people have retreated to the domestic sphere. They've retreated to the residents, they've retreated to the suburbs, and homelessness is more visible. And it kind of creates this feedback loop where people are like, well, now I just don't feel comfortable going downtown. And that can kind of take on a life of its own. I mean, especially with a lot of people who are now working from home, you know, like prior to the pandemic, I went downtown every day to go to my office. I'm still working from home 24/7, right? In a few weeks, I'll be going downtown back to the office 2 days a week. right? And so I think you will start to see, especially government workers, you'll start to see them filter back into downtown. And I think there's probably some big opportunities to say, what are we going to do with that? Because there's going to be more people down there spending time and spending money.
I want to throw out one just fun idea for everyone. I saw in Miami, they have turned a parkade into a multi-use space. And one of them, they use it for wedding, yoga classes, you know, different uses depending on the time of day. And maybe think of the Yates Street Parkade kind of above Lucky Bar there. And if you've ever been to the top floor, actually, if any of our parkades, the top floors are these like beautiful outdoor spaces above the city. They're paved and like sun all day long. And what do we use it for? Storing cars. And it's the worst spot to park. You got to go drive all the way up to the top. And I thought like, hey, what if we turn that Yates Street Parkade? It has ocean views. It overlooks the whole harbor.
It's beautiful. They did use it for Rifflandia and Thinklandia one year. So the top floor was used for Thinklandia.
One time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, Rifflandia wasn't here for a couple of years. So.
No, that's true. But I mean, I think that what both Will and Tess have picked up on coming from different parts of the world is that in North America, we gave our cities over to cars after World War II. We pulled out all the streetcars. I mean, once upon a time, there were three train lines running up the Sandwich Peninsula. They're all gone now. You know, it's great that it's left us some bike infrastructure. That's cool. But, you know, we created cities in the post-war period for cars. And now we've kind of come to this realization that that was a huge mistake for climate reasons, for health and well-being reasons, for walkability reasons, for like all the reasons. And I think it's going to be this long kind of torturous process to decouple ourselves from car culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it'd be great to have that train line back. You know, it was very funny that article came out. There was a study done that it cost $600 million to get the train going from Langford. And everyone's like, oh, $600 million. And it's a big number, but not when you look at the BC transport budget. It's actually not that much. And it's not fixing a road which will then degrade. It's creating a system which will sustain itself financially in theory because people will be paying for transport. So I don't know. I think that it's a tough one because that's a no-brainer, you know, more public transport. But I know it's more complicated than that, especially how municipalities are broken up and how that works.
It is complicated, but I agree with you completely, Will. And there's still a huge amount of classism and I think racism around public transit. Public transit has a bad image in North America in a way that it just doesn't when I've spent time in England and France. You know, it's the normal way that people, but in North America, the really important people drive cars, you know?
Yeah.
Those are the
important people have three cars.
Totally.
Right? Important people have cars. Unimportant people are walking. And that deep bias is baked into so many of our systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a shame because in England, where people don't talk to each other in public, you do get a bit of interaction on buses and tubes. And it's another chance for people to meet and encounter different walks of life and, you know, industries. And it's a shame that it's not so used in Victoria.
Yeah. And just mindful of time here, we should maybe kind of bring this to a close. Final thoughts on innovation, downtown Victoria, the future of the city. You feeling pessimistic, optimistic?
I'm feeling optimistic. I do think that our city council needs to loosen up a bit and make things a little easier for people to do innovative things. I think that often the process takes too long. I've heard of a lot of builders that just don't even bother coming to Victoria because it's too much. So I would like the city council to be a little bit more flexible and open to ideas. And I think that more outdoor space and communal space like we've just been talking about would be great.
Thanks, Tessa. Will?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can always make processes more easy. And I think in general for Victoria and Greater Victoria, one thing I've noticed here, which sort of took me by surprise as a newcomer, is the ultra emphasis on supporting local, which is fantastic and it's very important. But I think alongside that, you've got to look outwards and have an acceptance of, you know, international thinking, practices. And I think often things here will just go to the person who's nearest rather than the person who's best for the job. And I think if I was going to, my one wish for Victoria for the future is that there'd be a more outwards facing approach. And yes, that ability to really you know, think about working with artists and creators and designers from all over the place and get their ideas into Victoria as well. That actually makes the artists and designers and creators here better, because they're getting new ideas and competing with them and, you know, in that conversation with them as well.
Very well put. And a perspective we don't often hear enough, that kind of cosmopolitan approach in Victoria, where it is like this hyper focus on local and maybe not looking around the world and soliciting the like the best practices and taking inspiration from what others are doing.
Exactly. So,
points very well taken. Just want to thank you one more time. Matt, final thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say it's inspiring to hear from that how many people in Victoria are out there that are really thinking in innovative ways and doing cool things. And, you know, like, Will, I never really knew a guy like you existed in the city. And there's people like us all over the place. And I think sometimes it's almost like making sure we're coming together and learning from one another and going like, oh, it's not just me that wants to see the parkade turned into a rooftop garden or whatever it may be. And so, yeah, thanks just both for coming on. And like, I'm looking forward to sharing this and, you know, hopefully kind of keeping this conversation going and hearing from others who are thinking the same way and yeah, pushing the city forward. I'm optimistic.
Thanks, Tessa. Thanks, Will.
Great.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks, Matt. Good to see you.
Just want to thank our guests, Tessa and Will, one more time for coming on the podcast. I thought it was really informative and enlightening conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a pleasure. Good to know people out there feel the same ways I do about innovation and the need for it in Victoria. And it's just the importance of continuing the conversation. There's a couple of disagreements in there about, you know, the government street pedestrian way and impacts on business. And I totally take that seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we need to talk about these things. What do we want to look like in 10 years? What do we want to look like in 20 years? Because I don't want to look like 1960s Victoria. And that seems to be what's in our mind a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So, very two innovative people, and I'm happy to have that opportunity.
And it was also interesting to hear what they had to say about whether or not they feel safe or whether or not Victoria's downtown has fallen on hard times. It's always good to get the impression of small business owners down there. And I think what I heard was that they don't feel unsafe per se in downtown Victoria, but there is the sense that it needs economic and cultural revitalization. Like, it needs to be revived after the pandemic and everything that's gone on.
And that's why the public spaces are so important. I keep saying that's how you're going to get families downtown. A lot of families don't have money to spend downtown. Like, they're living on the line with little kids. They want to go downtown for the social aspect, not to buy restaurant food or whatever. And right now it's a lacking in things you can do for free downtown. Like, you can walk through the Bay Center Mall, Centennial Square, but even our boardwalk's not totally finished. And, you know, the new bridge, for example, there's some really good stuff like that where, like, you know, there's the walkways, but we need to double what we've done so far to make it a truly place where I say, Jeremy, let's go meet your family downtown, and there's a safe space where I know my kids aren't going to run into the room.
Yeah. All right, well, signing off. Thanks to our guests. Thanks to our listeners, and see you next time.
All right. Adios.